Leviticus 25, verse number 10 says, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." This is Pastor Wynn Greer from the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina, and this is the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. This is a ministry of the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church, and we want to take just a moment to let you know we'd love for you to come and visit with us and be a part of any or all of our services. We have a church website that lists all the information you need to know about the church and the address and phone number and time and all of those things, different ministries. It also has sermon archives, and it has radio archives. If you are a regular listener to the Blessings of Liberty and you miss a broadcast, you can go to our church website and find that the previous week's broadcast will be there. In fact, we do have several listeners that are not able to make it at the same time every week, and so they listen on the church website. So it's a great ministry, and we're thankful to be able to have that as part of our church ministry. It's good to see Noah today and good to have him here in the radio studio. Noah, are you having a good day?
Yes, I am. It's good to be here, and we do want to say welcome to all our listeners. Those who are listening in right here on AM 1450 WATA, and those who listen in on AM 690 WZAP out of Bristol, Virginia, and our listeners on KPGT 89.1 FM, The Truth, out of Watertown, South Dakota.
We do appreciate all of our listeners and are thankful for the opportunity that we have on the different radio stations. And here on Tuesdays, we're always live in the WATA studio. So some people have asked us, and years ago, I used to be on a radio station over in Bristol, Virginia. Well, I still am, but this was a different time. And, of course, we had to do our radio broadcast on cassettes, and we would mail them every week to the radio station. And I know for the longest time I had people, several different people, ask me about driving to Bristol every day to be on the radio for 10 minutes. And so we let them know we didn't go every day. We recorded and sent them. So, but now it's a whole lot easier than it used to be doing stuff like that. Noah takes care of it and records and emails some of our radio broadcasts. So we are thankful for the technology to do that. Well, we'll get into today's radio broadcast, and we've been studying different heroes of liberty. We've been doing this since the month of August, taking a different individual every week and their contribution to liberty. We've used mainly individuals. We have looked at a few groups of people, but mainly we've been looking at different people. And today we're going to look at a true national hero, not an American but an Israeli, and not an ancient hero. You think about Israel, you might think about a biblical character. And we have saw and looked at some biblical characters. In fact, the first person we looked at was Moses and his contribution to liberty, and how that the first time the word liberty is used in the Bible, Moses wrote that down. And we say that every week when we come on the radio broadcast. Leviticus 25:10, proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. But the individual we're going to look at today is not an ancient hero. He is a modern hero. And we're going to look at a gentleman named Jonathan Netanyahu. And up until just a few months ago, I had never heard of Jonathan Netanyahu. And the way I did come to learn about this, now some of our local listeners will have known Miss Louise Cornett. Now, she was a member of our church, and many people know her, and she recently passed away. We had her funeral just a few Sundays ago, but she was a wonderful Christian lady, a real witness to others concerning the Lord Jesus Christ. She had a desire to get the gospel out, and just a great testimony, a great example, and much of the work that she did as far as going. She used to go into the prisons, the ladies' prisons, and she's just very involved in the missionary work locally of the church. But Sister Louise also loved Israel and loved the Jewish people, and she had went on a trip to Israel a few years ago and had a great time. And anyway, before she passed away, late last summer or early fall, she gave me some of her books out of her library. And in those books, there was a book about Jonathan Netanyahu. Now, Jonathan Netanyahu is the brother of Benjamin and Ido Netanyahu. Benjamin, of course, is even now the prime minister of Israel. And I know most of you would recognize that name, Benjamin Netanyahu. And personally, I think he's a great leader just in and of himself, one of the few great leaders that I would classify as a great leader even in the world today. But Jonathan was Benjamin's younger brother. And Jonathan Netanyahu was an Israeli Special Forces commander. He was the commander of an operation to rescue about 100 Israeli Jewish hostages whose plane had been hijacked in Libya. And Idi Amin, he was, many of you may remember that name. He was one of the most fearful, dreaded terrorists in the world in the 1970s, but he was behind the hijacking of this plane. It was an Air France jetliner, and it stopped over in Libya. It had been hijacked by these terrorists and had been flown to Uganda. Now, this happened in the latter part of the month of June, 1976. And after a few days in negotiations, they had let all the passengers go that were not Jewish or Israeli citizens. And so all they had left was the flight crew of the Air France airliner. And then they had these hostages, Jewish people and Israeli citizens. I say that because that's how the book explained it. Some were Jews, but were not citizens of Israel. They were headed there, going to visit, but they were still Jewish. And so there was over 100 of these Jews who were being held hostage in the country of Uganda at a place called Entebbe. It was an airport there, and there was a new terminal, there was an old terminal, and the hostages were being held in the old terminal. And maybe you've heard of this, Entebbe. Now, I did not know anything about this. Of course, in July of 1976, I would have been 6 years old, so I was not keeping up with the front page headlines at the time, I'm sure. I'm sure it was in the news. In fact, I'd asked some people if they remembered, and those that are older than I am, they remembered about this, but I'd never heard about it. I didn't know Benjamin Netanyahu had a brother who was a national hero. I didn't know any of these things. And so Sister Louise had a couple of books there, and I read one. I'm in the middle of reading the other book, and it's just a very fascinating story. And I've been reading these books and learning. Now, one book, the first book I read, is called Entebbe, A Defining Moment in the War on Terrorism, the Jonathan Netanyahu story. And I'm just going to read from the back cover of it. It said, The rubble of 9/11 awakened many to the harsh fact that terrorists really do want to destroy their perceived enemies. Today's global war on terrorism, raging day and night, can be won using the uncompromising lesson learned from Entebbe. Those who guard freedom must be very courageous indeed to preserve for future generations the truth that good is stronger than evil. Now, any person who believes the Holy Bible and takes it literally is bound to be interested in the Jewish people and the nation of Israel. And I realize that maybe not all of our listeners, I'm sure not all of our listeners are Christians. I'm sure we have a mixed audience, and maybe sometimes people wonder why Christians are so interested in the Jewish nation of Israel or in the Jewish people. And there is the reason for that. I'm just going to take a moment to talk about that. Why are Christians so interested in Israel, Jerusalem, and the Jewish people? Well, the Bible is why, and the things the Bible says. The Bible is, in fact, a Jewish book. The Bible instructs us in many places about the Jewish people and the Gentiles or non-Jewish people, their interactions with the Jewish people. And so the Bible has a great deal, and I emphasize that, the Bible has a lot to say about the Jewish people and about Jerusalem and about Israel. Psalms 122, verse number 6. And I read this verse last Sunday night at church in our prayer time. And I read this verse. The Bible says, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. They shall prosper that love thee. And, of course, we hear people say, pray for Israel, pray for the Jewish nation. And to pray for the peace of Jerusalem is actually a prayer for Christ to come, for the Messiah to come. And when he comes, there will be peace in Jerusalem and all over the world, but not until then. So we were, I mentioned a few things going on in the world in relation to Israel, and just that among all the other things we are praying about, to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And of course, as we've already said, the Bible, if you know anything about the Bible is basically a Jewish book. The authors that the Lord used to write the Bible were mainly Jewish people. There are a few Gentile writers, but for the great part, they were Jews. Most of the prophecies revolve around Israel, Jerusalem, and the Jewish people. Now, the Gentile kingdoms and the other nations of the world, they are mentioned in the Bible, specifically the book of Daniel, Isaiah's prophecy, Jeremiah, the book of Revelation has a great deal to say about other nations, but the majority of prophecies concern the Jewish people and will be fulfilled and have been fulfilled in the Jewish people. The nation of Israel, for example, is a fulfillment of prophecy. The Bible prophesied that the Jewish people would be dispersed. They call that the diaspora. But that they would be gathered back together in their own land. And so May of 1948, Israel became a nation once again after being dispersed for over 1,900 years. This is a direct fulfillment of Bible prophecy. The disciples were Jewish. The first Christian church in the whole wide world started in Jerusalem. And if you know anything about the book of Acts and the first part and the day of Pentecost and all of that took place in Jerusalem. So just talking about some examples of why that Christians are concerned and interested in the Jewish people. The Apostle Paul was a converted Jew. And most of the New Testament, especially the letters in the New Testament after the Gospels, was written by the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, but God used the Apostle Paul to write those letters. So just a few reasons why Christians are interested in the Jewish people and in Jerusalem and in the nation of Israel. Now, to tell and talk about the story of Jonathan Netanyahu is actually, I wouldn't have time to tell everything that happened during the hostage crisis of 1976, so I'll have to do what I do sometimes, make a long story short and just sort of summarize what happened. Now, one of the reasons maybe you've never heard or that I had never heard of Jonathan Netanyahu is because although he is a national hero in Israel, he was killed during that operation. He died. He was shot by, as far as they know, a Ugandan soldier, a sentry there. So he was killed during the rescue operation. But what is miraculous about that is he was the only soldier out of about 200 soldiers involved that died. And so he was the only one. And it's just amazing, the story in and of itself. In fact, there was a movie made about this. I think the name of it is Victory at Entebbe. I've never seen it. It's an old movie. I think Charles Bronson was in it, and it may be good or it may be not. I don't know as far as, but I know they did make a movie out of it. But Israel, they had a plan. It was came together in just a matter of a few short days. They didn't have months and months to prepare for this because of the way it came about. But they flew four C-130 Hercules planes from Israel into enemy territory. They landed them at the Entebbe airport. They were transport planes. They let down the gate. They had vehicles that they had painted up and made to look like a Ugandan, like Idi Amin's Mercedes-Benz and some Land Rovers, and they put the Ugandan flags on them, and they took off down the airstrip and took off towards that old terminal there. And it's just amazing how they did that. They landed the four C-130s. They surprised the Ugandan army, and there was an army base there that joined the airport. They surprised the terrorists, killed all the terrorists that were involved and the Ugandan sentries that were guarding the airport there. They destroyed a quarter of the Ugandan Air Force's airplanes while they were there. So they did a little extra work while they were at it. They had MiG jets there, and so they had to destroy them so the jets wouldn't take off and shoot down the C-130s after they had taken off. But they carried out this operation. It started right around midnight, and within 90 minutes from the time the first plane landed and all the building was stormed, the terrorists were killed, the hostages were gathered up, they were hauled out to the first C-130, loaded up. And they did all that in less than 90 minutes. So it's just amazing the precision and to do all that. Now, Jonathan Netanyahu, he died during the first minutes. And then two of the hostages, one by a stray bullet and another one who, when they stormed into the room, they had bullhorns and they were shouting in Hebrew and English for everybody to stay down. And there was one hostage that, instead of staying on the floor, he jumped up and he was killed as well. So only three people, but it just an amazing rescue military operation. But I want to just take a few minutes and think about what makes a hero. Now, Jonathan Netanyahu immediately became a national hero. And many people, even in Israel at that time, did not know him by name because he was in the special forces and much of what he did was classified as secret. So it's not like he was an everyday name. But now they've renamed that Operation Jonathan, and he's a national hero. And I'm sure many of you probably remember this happening in 1976. But three things I want to give you about Jonathan Netanyahu and what makes a hero a hero. And that's a word that we use lightly in this day and time. But as I've read this story and the books and the information about him, I've just begin to admire him as an individual and a real hero. And so we want to say just a few things about what makes a hero and the life of Jonathan Netanyahu, and sort of apply this to our daily lives. Number one, I would say about Jonathan Netanyahu that he was a man of understanding. He had a short life. He only lived to be, I believe it would worked out to be 30 years old. But he had great understanding about the world and what was going on in the world. He came to America. Now, he was born in Israel, and he came to America with his parents when he was 17 years old. He knew he was only going to be here a year and a half until he turned 18 and was able to go back to Israel and join the army. So he came with his parents to America when he was 17 years old. And in the book, The Letters of Jonathan Netanyahu, he tells about what it was like to come to America as a teenager in the 1960s, some of the things he noticed and wrote about. he was appalled by the shallowness of the average American student. How shallow, I mean, without understanding the average American was. Now, we're talking about in 1963. He wrote a letter to a friend of his in Israel, a fellow student, and he said this about living in America. He said, the only thing people talk about is cars and girls. Life revolves around one subject, sex. I think Freud would have found very fertile soil here. Bit by bit, I'm becoming convinced I'm living among apes, not human beings. Now, that's not flattering towards Americans and what they're concerned about. But he's writing in 1963. But couldn't we say today that, and observe this as a fact, that most Americans, especially the younger generations, and I'm talking about my generation, on down, most Americans are just ignorant of what is really going on in the world. Most Americans are ignorant of our history, our country, our contributions, our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and on and on and on we could go. Most people just observe as you go around, are just interested on what's on their phone, what's on Facebook, and that's generally pretty shallow stuff that we're talking about. And, of course, he came from a much more serious background growing up in Israel and the threat of terrorism being real and invasion and all of these things. I wanted to give another example of that from his letters. He wrote this a little later in his life. He actually went back to Israel. He joined the army, and then he came back and he spent a semester studying at Harvard. In Cambridge, Massachusetts, but he wrote another letter in June 13th, 1973, and he's writing to a friend. He said, "America is as I remembered it, a country that moves you to pity on the one hand and honest admiration on the other. Pity because young people here are caught up in the toils of endless frustration and seem unable to progress beyond the infantile stage. On the main streets of Cambridge, where my university is located," he's got that in parentheses, "one sees young people sitting on the sidewalks, barefoot, half-naked, and dirty, begging alms and strumming guitars or toying with Indian beads or distributing religious propaganda. Of course, not all of them are as extreme as that, but they're all brought up to be anti-establishment, and they all sling mud at the U.S. government. It seems that people here stopped being objective long ago. You feel sorry for America. These lunatics will destroy her." And so many things we could say about that, but he had some insight. He had some understanding about the times in which he lived. The Bible talks about in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, or 1 Chronicles chapter 12, verse 32, about the men of Israel, men that had understanding of the times to know what Israel ought to do. We ought to know what's going on in the world, and you don't know what's going on in the world just by following one news source, just by listening to MSNBC or CNN or Fox. You get a slanted view, but most people don't even know the basic things that are going on in the world. He was a man of understanding. We need to have individuals like that. Second of all, he was a man of purpose. He believed every person was here for a purpose, that they should find it and do it, and to fail in that was to waste precious time. To fail to find your purpose in life and to do something worth something was unforgivable to him. Now, he was a prolific letter writer, and many times in his letters, he's writing to people, and he's encouraging them not to waste precious time. Again, when he was only 17 years old, he wrote a letter to a classmate encouraging him in his studies. He said to his classmate, he said, "Muster your strength and try a little more on your studies instead of wasting your precious time." And he wrote to another friend of his. He said, "I must feel certain." Now, at 17 years old, he makes a statement like this. He said, "I must feel certain that not only at the moment of my death shall I be able to account for the time that I have lived, I ought to be ready every moment of my life to confront myself and say, this is what I've done." And he lived that kind of life, the kind of life that had a purpose and lived to fulfill a purpose, and that every day was important. I read in my Bible reading this morning, Proverbs 27, verse number 1, "Boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth." We don't know what tomorrow holds. We'd better do something important today. And so his constant theme, and I have preached this over and over down through the years, that we all have a purpose. We ought to find the will of God for our lives. We ought to do it. What are you doing with your life? You ought to make it count. And so a great example there of a purposed life. And then number 3, he was a man of resolve. Jonathan Netanyahu was a soldier, or he was a soldier. And he saw fighting and death, and he knew what was at stake, and he was willing to die for what he believed in. He was decorated for bravery in battle before he went to Entebbe. So he wasn't an incidental hero. He didn't just die in battle, but he had fought in battle and been courageous before he ever died in battle. And he was decorated from fighting in the Yom Kippur War. He wrote a letter to a widow of a fellow officer who had been killed in the Yom Kippur War, and he said this. He said, "For years now, we've been trying to inure ourselves, and mean to just get used to or accustom ourselves to the price we must pay so that we and others can live in this country of ours on this soil." And so he knew that a price could be paid for having freedom, and that it had to be paid by someone. Those surrounding Jonathan Netanyahu in his last days before Entebbe said that he acted almost like he knew that they would come back, but that he would not. One of the members of the rescue force said this. He said, "There was this reddish light, and I remember that we saw his face. He wasn't wearing his beret or his ammo vest or gun. He spoke to all the men, smiled at us, said a few words of encouragement to each one. It was as though he were leaving us, as though he knew what was going to happen to him. He didn't issue any orders, but just tried to instill confidence. I remember that he shook hands with the youngest guy on the force. He acted more like a friend. I sensed he felt that from here on everything depended on these men. He had seen a lot of combat, and quite a few of the soldiers there had seen none at all, or a lot less than he had. And I remember his going by, joking a little, exchanging a few words, easing the men's tension before battle." And so it's just a great example of these things that we talked about this morning. He was a man of understanding, a man of purpose, and a man of resolve. It reminds me of the verse in the Bible, John 15:13, "Greater love hath no man than this, that a man may lay down his life for his friends." And it said in the book, it is a sentiment that transcends time and battles and wars. It was the thing that sent Yanni to Entebbe. And so we appreciate you listening in today. We hope you have a great day. Noah's going to come, give the contact information, or just a little bit of it. I've run over today. So we appreciate you listening. Have a good day, and God bless.